We'll be reading two verses, verses 8 and 9. Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. This weekend we've been having a conference that we call it a Parents and Serving Ones Conference, and we've been kind of fellowshipping related to the children's work in the Lord's recovery, the children's work in the church. And anyway, we come to a very crucial aspect of the work, and so we'll begin by reading these two verses, Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. Let's read them together. Finally, brothers, what things are true, what things are dignified, what things are righteous, what things are pure, what things are lovely, what things are well spoken of, if there is any virtue, and if any praise, take account of these things. The things which you have also learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. Very good. And the things which you have also learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. In this last session, we come to what we would call the second big pillar in our work with the children. We began on Friday night. We had a fellowship on vessels unto honor for God's eternal economy to leave a deep impression that what we are doing in our work is a work on vessels. We are even in a function similar to that of a potter who is molding and shaping humanity so that one day, at the right time, they could be filled with divinity. That God could enter into these vessels and shine out from them in a most glorious way. So we had this fellowship about the need for us to be open vessels, about how to be emptied out. We fellowshipped how to cooperate with the Lord for his move. All of this was to give us a deep impression that we're not dealing in a way of education, in a way of academic knowledge with the children, but we are shaping humanity. We are preparing vessels. God needs vessels. We saw in the last point of the first outline, for God to bless his church, he needs vessels in which he could pour out that blessing and enter into them and fill them. Then in the second message, it was a message directed mostly to the parents. It was a message on cooperating with God as parents, cooperating with God for his move as parents entrusted with their children to lead them, to nurture them in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. Then in the second session yesterday morning, we saw something concerning the importance of the children's work in the church. And last night really felt very, very good to see the increase of the church is also through the children's work. Last night in our fellowship, we presented that there is a great pillar that should be a dominant, prevailing aspect of any kind of children's work is that it is a big gospel. It's a big gospel. I think last night we got to see it's a big gospel. It's an aspect of the increase of the church that many places, maybe many local churches have never opened up this aspect for the increase of the church. I hope that after these days, this weekend, there will be some who would come together to pray to see how this kind of vision could be worked out. You know, we're just fellowshipping kind of a vision. We're flying at 30,000 feet, and we're looking at the whole thing from the eyes of our brother. And at some point, we're going to have to land this plane and work it out. But anyway, we'll save that for later. For now, let's just soar, okay? Well, there's another aspect, very, very predominant, another pillar related to the children's work that we have to see. If you get these two pillars, you got it. You can do it. You understand. Now you understand what we need to do to prepare another generation for the Lord's move. You know, we live in a very dark age. The enemy has come in. These verses in 2 Thessalonians about the mystery of lawlessness, is advancing and prevailing, and it will continue to advance until the man of lawlessness is revealed. We watch this happen in our society, even the last 5 to 10 years. It's alarming. And you can just imagine our children are going to be exposed to this kind of society, this kind of culture in the coming years. How could anyone stand? Is there a way, is it possible for children to be able to stand up in such a dark age? Well, as we've been considering this, and I don't want to talk about the dark age, I'd much rather talk about God's economy, but we understand that to do our work in the beginning stages of a child's development in the area that we call BC, before Christ, there's a certain kind of molding and shaping and preparing, not their spirituality, but their humanity to be able to stand and even withstand in the evil day. And we are really in the evil day. And so I'm completely amazed that our brother emphasized this matter 50 years ago in his fellowship to the churches, that this is what we should do when we do the children's work. We have to build them up in their humanity to be proper human beings. So this is this message this morning, the children's work being to build children up in their humanity to be proper human beings. You know, yesterday, before I start the outline, yesterday, in a few of the sessions, I made reference to Brother Lee's word to the churches in Taiwan, particularly Taipei, to get 10,000 children. And then I had repeated how they had didn't do it, and they didn't, you know, do it. And 18 years later, 20 years later, he kept bothering them. But I'd like to report to you this morning that the brothers in Taiwan are very serious about this and are desperately laboring to work this out. I didn't want to leave you with a bad impression concerning the brothers there. We surely treasure the churches in Taiwan and the labor of the brothers there. And I could let you know that we have been in fellowship a little bit with the brothers taking the lead there to learn from them and to even fellowship with them to see the same that we're seeing and working out the same things. And we're very happy about this. So I wanted to close the loop on that. I didn't want to leave any kind of bad impression. Anyway, let's read through this outline this morning. And I think this will touch something, even touch something deep in our being. This use of the word to build up children in their humanity to be proper human beings. It was one of those things that as we were reading through the transcripts and as we were studying and reviewing and all the time, you remember, I mentioned, this is from chapter 12 in the book. When we were, I was telling you about those sisters from Chifu who were asking Brother Lee, what should we do? What should we teach the children? He said, don't teach, don't teach. 3 times, don't teach. Finally, he says this, you have to build them up in their humanity. to be proper human beings. And then later, he repeated that again. That was in the 40s. In the 60s, again, build up the children in their humanities, in their humanity to be proper human beings. Again, in the 70s and the 80s, all the way into the 90s, he kept saying, when he was talking about what to teach the children, what do we cover in our children's lessons, he said it again and again. It was like a broken record. Build up the children in their humanity. And you'll see it on the outline. It'll come up many times. And you'll see how he worded it, how he shared it, how he developed it and explained it. So let's begin. Romans 1 says, if you don't have an outline, do you have an outline? If you don't have an outline, I think you can put your hand up. The brothers may bring you one. It'd be good to have one. Are there any more back there? Today, many young people have been damaged with respect to their character. It is because of this that we have a children's work for the children. We need to build up their character. Let me read that again. Today, look at this. Today, look at the situation today. Many young people have been damaged with respect to their character. Many young people. That would imply teenagers, college students, young people have been damaged. Their character has been damaged. And it's because of this. And he's not speaking about the church people, although it includes the church people. But it's because of this damage. It's because of this trend, this condition, that young people today do not have a proper character. They don't have a proper humanity, and it's because of this that we must have a children's work for the children. I love this phrase, because of this. This gave us some impression that this is the purpose of having a children's work, and when we gather them, we're not just babysitting them. Now this is what we're doing. It's because there's a trend, there's a certain condition going on in society today that has ruined so many young people in their character. Isn't that right? Look around. Look what happens. The children are growing up in a society where everybody lies, everybody steals, everyone cheats, immorality is everywhere. And there's no proper character. There's no proper humanity. There used to be a day when there was structure. When I gave you my word, it was my honor. My word is my honor. I don't need to sign that. I gave you my word. I would rather die than be considered a liar. Right? There was humanity there. There would never be immorality. Because what? It undermines the fabric of my humanity. I could not do that. I couldn't do that because I'm a man. I'm a proper man. Not just a Christian, a man. But today, what has happened is there's no God, there's no sin, there's no conscience, there's no right and wrong. It's all relative. And so this has ruined the character, the humanity of all the young people. This is Satan's target. If he can ruin the young people, he can ruin humanity. Because of this, because we see this, because of this, we have to do a children's work. And what do we do in our children's work? We have to build up their character. This is what we zero in on. Okay, A says, the children must be built up as proper human beings. This is a matter of character, that is, behavior and habit. Okay, he said this. as I mentioned so many times, build them up in their humanity to be proper human beings. And so after a while, we began to ask Brother Lee, of course, Brother Lee's not here to answer anymore. Brother Lee, what do you mean, proper humanity, proper human beings? What exactly are you talking about? And the more we read and reread and went back and looked at these portions again and again, it began to become clear. That's why he says here, it's quite simple, this is a matter of character. That is behavior and habit. He's talking about behavior and habit. You know, in the church life, we don't talk too much about behavior. You know, we talk about dispensing. But when we're talking to children, when we're in this BC stage, we have to talk about behavior and habit. In fact, whenever you're talking to children about building up the children's character, what we're dealing with and what we're doing is we are talking about habits. Please and thank you is a habit. Putting your shoes away, hanging up your clothes is a habit. Making your bed is a habit. We prepared an entire outline. Maybe someday we'll go through this outline with you on how to build up the children's character. And the reason we did that is because we found out in so many places right away what the saints would do is they would run to their bookshelf and they'll pull off Brother Lee's character book, which was delivered to full-timers that were 30 years old. And we try, and that is our understanding of character. Now, I'm fully aware that there were some saints in Taiwan that produced children's lessons out of those 30 character points. I'm not familiar with how they did it, and I have no problem with that, so don't misunderstand me. But my point is, it's not doctrinal. We're not talking about 30 character points doctrinally to the children. Exact, genuine, magnanimous, suffering, ardent. There's a lot of these things. But when Brother Lee was talking about developing the children's character, what he was talking about was the details of their daily life. That's where their character is shaped. What do they do when they wake up in the morning? When do they go to bed at night? When do they get up? What do? They brush their teeth, they comb their hair, they wash their face, they make their bed, and you make them into a machine. You develop their human character through their daily habits. Habits of courtesy, respect, please, thank you, yes ma'am, no ma'am. Things like this. This is how character is shaped in a child. From their youth, B, they must learn to honor their parents, love their brothers and sisters, and respect others. When he spoke about building up the children with proper humanity, every time, I think it's every time, he always added this, it was like a tagline. You have to show them or teach them to honor their parents, honor their father and mother, honor their parents. He felt this is the number one point related to building up humanity, proper humanity, to honor their parents. Then he would add, love their brothers and sisters, respect others, don't steal, things like this. From their youth, they must learn to honor their parents, love their brothers and sisters, and respect others. We do not need to give the young ones too much knowledge of the Bible. We should rather build them up with the proper ethics and morality that will constitute a proper character. So here you have four words. Let me give you these four words again. Behavior, habit, ethics, morality. This is what children need from the time they're little. But he also says we don't need to give them too much knowledge of the Bible, which is what we all want to do. as serving ones, the first thing we want to do is we want to teach them the Bible. I'm not suggesting that we never use the Bible. We need to learn how to use the Bible in a most wise way. Don't say, oh, Brother Tom said we shouldn't use the Bible. That's wrong. No, we need to use the Bible. But we use the Bible to do this. We don't just use the Bible to educate them with a lot of knowledge from the Bible. Romans 2. Character has very much to do with the Lord's service. Consider those persons in the Bible whom God used. They were used by God because they possessed a character that was fit for his use. Since Abraham, Moses, and Paul all had an excellent character, God greatly used them. The destiny of our usefulness to the Lord, or the usefulness of our children, hinges on our character. These points are just strengthening this particular matter of character. When Brother Lee spoke about building them up in their humanity, he sometimes used the word character, as we see here. Sometimes he didn't. Actually, most of the time he didn't, but often he did. So we realize that it touches character, but it's not just all character. In fact, we came to the conclusion that character is an aspect of what a proper humanity is. Proper humanity is very broad, and I'll get into this in a minute, what our understanding is of this matter. And character is an aspect of this broad topic of proper humanity. Character is a serious matter. The measure of grace we receive of the Lord and the degree to which the function of that grace is manifested are determined by the kind of character that we have. When Brother Lee talked about this, he talked about character is like the quality of fabric, that our humanity is like fabric. And there's various levels, various degrees, various qualities of fabric. You could have a very coarse burlap fabric, cheap. It didn't cost anything. It's just cheap. And you dip it in some dye, and it comes out with a color. But if you take the most expensive Chinese silk, the finest fabric, and you dip that into the same dye, the expression is altogether different. The expression is so bright, so colorful. He points out that the dye is not different. The dye is the Holy Spirit. The dye is the Lord's grace. It's his salvation. But the fabric is different. It was the humanity of that person that was different. Even though they received the same Lord, the same Christ, the same Spirit, the expression and the manifestation is quite a bit different. And it was because they didn't have the proper humanity. And so you can see that while we are in this stage, this is why we call it a stage of preparation, because we are preparing the humanity to receive divinity. We're preparing the finest Chinese silk. That's what we're doing. And we're getting it ready to be dunked or dipped into that big tank of grace. And when it comes out, woo, it looks good. It's so bright. As we struggled with this, to try to understand this, it occurred to us, through the ministry, through some portions, that this is how it works. This is what we're doing. Let me try to fellowship it like this. You know, God is invisible. God is almighty. He's all-powerful. But he's intangible. Invisible, you can't touch him. You can't see him. You can't smell, feel. Many people don't believe in God because they can't see him. They can't feel him. But God is rich and boundless in his divine attributes. What God is in his very essence and being is a universe all by itself. You take one attribute of God. God is love, and he's love to the uttermost. You can't measure it. We have that hymn. You can't write it in the sky. You can't use the ocean for ink. There's not enough words. There's not enough space. You just touch one attribute of God, love. It's a whole universe. But then how many attributes are there? There's light. There's holiness. There's righteousness. Those are four. But there's another 30 or so revealed in the Bible. Every one of them is a universe all by itself. And this rich, boundless God wants to be expressed. He's unknown. He's mysterious. Nobody knows him. They can't see him. They can't touch him. They can't hear him. But he's so rich and boundless. And he wants to be known. He wants to be seen. He wants to be touched. He wants to be experienced. So he made man in his image. He made man in the image of every one of those attributes. Man became a physical replica of the boundless, rich, eternal God. Man was made, as we've heard so many times, like a glove in the shape of a boundless, eternal, universal, rich God. God is love. Man has love. God is light. Man has an attribute of light. Not dark, light. Righteousness, holiness. Everything that God is was shaped, made, molded into that red earth when God formed man of the dust of the ground. He made man as a perfect match. This is God in his rich attributes. But he didn't make man like physically, although probably. But it was the human virtues that match the divine attributes. It was the human virtues that were molded into that humanity that matched the divine attributes of God. Attributes, virtues. With God, it's attributes. With man, it's virtues. These match. Of course, the fall came and ruined, utterly destroyed that vessel. Before God could enter in, that humanity was ruined. But I believe that when Brother Lee talks about building up the children to be proper human beings, what he's talking about is developing the human virtues within those little vessels that would express the divine attributes. For example, we have to develop the divine attribute of virtue of love, the human virtue of love, to match the divine attribute of love. One day, this boundless God will enter into that hand, into that glove, into that vessel. And we have been preparing that vessel so that when the divine love enters into that virtue of love, poof, it shines so bright. What did it look like when the Lord Jesus was on the earth? He was the first man that God could be expressed freely without any hindrance at all. He was a God-man. He was a real God-man. And the divine attributes had the full liberty, without hindrance, to be expressed through him. And there's one top at virtue that you see again and again and again in the Gospels. It's called compassion. That's the top human virtue that expresses the divine love, compassion. When he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them. they were like sheep without a shepherd. Compassion is the ache within your being as you enter into and feel the anguish of other people. When you feel other sorrow, when you touch their heartache, that's compassion. Now suppose you were there in those days. You were that leper. And you said, have mercy on me. And the Lord had many times just given the word. Go, your faith has healed you. Go and sin no more. But to the leper, he touched him. He put his hands on him. That's compassion. That's humanity. That touch. That leper, when was the last time anyone held him? When was the last time anyone kissed him? The last time he was touched by anyone. You know, they have to announce, leper, leper. Everybody runs away. Everyone runs away. They're a plague. They're a curse. They're judged by God. And here's a man who's not afraid to touch him. How sweet. How precious was that touch? What was in that touch? Well, you say the healing power was in the touch. But even if he didn't get healed, just to be touched by that man, what did that mean? You see, that's humanity. Isn't that humanity? So I wonder, we want our children to be seeds of the gospel when they get into the junior high schools. But without the human virtue of compassion or sympathy, it'd be hard for them. Right? But how about we spend 300 Lord's days, and what we're doing is we're getting vessels ready. We understand God is almighty. He's all powerful. He's omniscient. He's rich and boundless in all that he is. And we're getting these little vessels ready to be the container of that rich God. Preparing those human virtues so that when the divine attribute comes in, oh, they're like that fabric, that Chinese silk. They go into the dye and they come out so bright, so shining. What about the human virtues of forgiveness? I mentioned sympathy. These are human virtues, right? Sympathy, caring, loyalty, faithful. How about even apologizing? Admitting you're wrong. Now you see, you know, yesterday morning we were talking about Brother Nee and his 5 points. Every one of them, human, humanity, proper aspirations, not being proud, humble. How about humility, being humble? Isn't that a very delightful human virtue? Sometimes the only way we can motivate our children is to make them proud. You're the smartest kid in the class. How come you failed that test? Come on, you're smarter than all these dumb Canadians. You can do better. You appeal to their pride. You build up their pride. But how about we build up a human virtue called humility? Patience. We got 6 years. And how many virtues are there that need to be touched? Maybe 100. At least 50. I've got a list of about 50. And every one of them. And you know what we need to do with the children? We need to inspire them. Not just educate them. We're not doing vocabulary lessons. Compassion. C-O-M-P-A. Compassion. Say it. It's 3 syllables. You know, no. What we're doing is we're showing them. We're showing them. Inspiring them. when they're young, they'll be inspired. They will want to be the most compassionate person that ever lived. They're going to want to be like Jesus. Do you know that little boy in your class? He's in a wheelchair. He's disabled. He talks funny. He can't. Everybody makes fun of him. We all know that. And then you can show them, you can illustrate what it feels like to be him, what it's like to be him. Then you conclude, why don't you be there, be his friend? You inspire them. You inspire them. You don't just teach them. Don't teach them. This is why it's so clear. Don't teach. But inspire them. If you can't inspire them, then you have to go back and learn. Learn how to do it. Learn how to say it. Learn how to present it. Learn how to give a picture, paint a picture, present an illustration. How about thank you? Thank you. Gratefulness. You know, one of the words that it describes the age that is against God is that they are unthankful. How about the human virtue of thankfulness? Thankful. And actually, in 2 Timothy 3, when it mentions unthankful, it's right after a description that calls it disobedient to parents. And the unthankful implies unthankful to parents. There's a great story I want to tell you. Make this a little bit of a children's meeting this morning, okay? We'll all go back. Maybe you heard me tell this before. There's a story of a whale that got caught in a fisherman's net somewhere. I don't even know where. And the whale was drowning. You know, whales have to breathe. They have to be able to swim up to the surface and get air, and then they go down for who knows. Yeah, then they come back up. And he swam into an area where there's a lot of fishermen, and they were having their nets out there. And the whale got caught in his net, and his dorsal fin was tangled up, and he couldn't swim. And he was struggling, and he was dying. And then there were some people that found this out. They noticed this. So they called whoever, I don't know who it is that saves the whales, but there's people that do this. And they called this rescue people, and they came out there, and they got these four scuba divers, and they went out in this boat to where the whale was, and they were planning, trying to figure out how to cut this whale free. We don't want him to die. How do we do this? And they realized, you know, this whale is over 100 feet long. It's tons. If he thrashes, he could kill them. If they got too close, they were afraid. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? So eventually they decided we're going to save this whale. So they dove in, you know, with their scuba gear on. They swam very gently up to the whale. And using their knives, they began to cut this net away. And they were so scared that as soon as he got free, what he would do. So they couldn't communicate with each other, but as they cut away the net, the whale was very still. Finally, the last part was cut free. And the whale, he didn't thrash. He just swam out, and then he swam around all four of them. And he came back in and he touched each one of them with his nose. And then he went away. He came back to say thank you. Sam, did your mom cook you breakfast this morning? She did. Did you say thank you? There's many ways to present how to say thank you. Obedience. You know, the Lord Jesus was obedient unto death. He's the epitome of obedience. All of us disobedient, right? We're just, sorry, Sam. But that's part of the thing. You tell a story and then you apply it, you know. Cliff, did your mommy make you breakfast this morning? Did you say thank you? Yeah. Very good, very good. That's what you have to do. Very good. Obedience is another one. And you know, the parents are always trying to get the child to obey the first time. You know how much trouble that was? They always obey, but it was after you got out the stick, you know, and we're about to do something to them. There's a story of a young boy. He was a child of missionaries, and he was in Africa. And their family was living in this compound out in the wild. And his parents had been working on him. You've got to obey the first time. The first time. Not the second. The first time. And as they were working on him and disciplining him and training him, one morning, the boy was outside and he was playing under a tree in the yard. And the mother was looking out the window, the kitchen window, as she was doing the dishes. And she noticed that over the child's head on a tree, a big snake was crawling. And it was coming right to the point right above the child's, where the child was playing. And she could tell the snake is about to get the child. And now she needed to give a call, a word to her boy, and she needed him to obey the first time. So she opened the window. She shouted to her boy, "Come in quick, come in quick."